we present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
We start with a cutting from the BBC Suffolk website, read by Vaughan Savage.
St Jude's Brewery is to reopen its pub in Matthews Street on 27th September due to popular demand. The company was declared insolvent in May as it had run out of liquid assets.
And our thanks to Andrew Kleissner for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Francis Ween and Susan Kalman. And opposite them on my left, Cal Wilson and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, who's saying balls to a pay freeze?
Well, it's this wonderful, never-ending summer of spectacle that's brought us all together. The Olympics, then the Paralympics, and now the Trades Union Congress. Claire Balding wasn't on it, but apart from that, it was very much in the spirit of the thing. You could press the red button to get synchronised striking. Actually, if they do call a general strike, it'll be the first one since 1926, when Fred Perry did it. So that'll be worth another victory parade. And apart from the synchronised heckling of Ed Balls, without which no event is complete these days, it was all Olympics. Brendan Barber, the outgoing General Secretary, gave a speech saying we've got to learn the lessons of the Olympics, and the government should concentrate and have an Olympic-style crusade, focusing on the things that we're best at as a nation. And actually, the lesson of the Olympics and Paralympics is the things we're best at as a nation are dressage and booing George Osborne. So we can expect a lot more of that.
The sad thing is, politically, the lesson of the Olympics is the private sector is not only greedy but incompetent, but never mind, because the army can always take over in a crisis. So never mind, if privatising everything doesn't work, we can have a coup.
Military cover for striking workers, and do not love the idea of a dinner lady who's in the Marines.
You see, that's the thing. It can only work if everyone comes out. Like librarians replaced by soldiers instead of... Shh! Line of law! Shut up! We have rights here! Quiet! It's a library!
What I like was there was a woman called Dot from the National Pensioners Convention.
Oh, yes.
Did you see her... who said that they were going to join in and do their bit with the general strike. And she said, we're going to go into town halls and sit down and refuse to budge. And they'll be sitting there saying, now, what did I come in here for?
I do like the idea, though, of pensioners protesting, because it would be wonderful kind of protest cries. It would be, what do we want? What?
I do think the tendency to boo is quite an interesting development. After Osborne was booed, now at the TUC, everyone's kind of gone, oh, this is a marvellous way of doing things. Boo!
Except, actually, when you see Boris Johnson, you have to cheer, because even if you don't like Boris Johnson, if he's standing alongside David Cameron and everyone cheers Boris Johnson, it gets Cameron so angry that it is the equivalent of booing him.
Is he somebody that's actually known in Australia? Does anybody know who Boris Johnson is?
I think so. We'd know him as the guy with the hair that looks like he's been spending a lot of time rubbing it with a balloon to get the static out. And he spends a lot of time dangling on a zip wire.
I think you've got his whole career in a nutshell. Yeah. But Ed Balls, I think he thought he was being heckled, but actually they were just chanting his surname in support, I think.
I quite like his name. It sounds like someone who's tried to give himself the most masculine name he can think of, Ed Balls. Like, he's going to be an action hero. And, like, Vince Cable as well sounds kind of Vince Cable.
Yeah.
Like, they obviously don't suit their names, but it sounds like they've given it a good crack.
Yeah.
Speaking of booing, of course, Gordon Brown got cheered when he appeared at the Olympics. It's like everyone went, oh, he wasn't that bad after all.
What sport was Gordon Brown in?
He wasn't competing. It wasn't like a late entry into the double skulls. Gordon Brown just going, right, I'll step up to it. No, he was just in the audience, I think.
That man could do double skulls on his own. I think that's a fantastic idea. There's a RMT's Bob Crow. I love this. This is a beautiful piece of poetry by one of the trade union leaders. Spit on your own and you can't do anything, but if you all spit together, you can drown the bastards. Do you not have a sense of the anniversary cards he writes for his wife? It's very impressive. This week, Shadow Chancellor Ed Balls was heckled at the Trade Union Congress, whose members voted overwhelmingly to start looking into the practicalities of the first general strike in Britain since 1926. Hearing the news about the possible strike, Cabinet Minister Francis Maude recommended that the public store paramedics and nurses in a jerry can, just in case. Rejecting the union's position, Ed Miliband has been accused of biting the hand that feeds him, which coincidentally is what got him and David separated at play school. 2 points to Francis. Jeremy, who is one step closer to justice now they finally know the truth?
Well, this is a serious one. It's a subject that has dominated the news, apart from The Telegraph, on which it was page six, when they said Northerners' complaints partially recognised. But, yeah, Hillsborough, which is very good news for the Hillsborough Justice Campaign and the family support group, it's a positive result that the bravery and stoicism and dignity of those families has now paid off, and hopefully now that the truth is out, they'll start to get justice.
Since the disaster, the Sun newspaper has largely been boycotted in Liverpool, not just because of that headline, but because I think everybody in Liverpool has got better taste. The Sun apologised previously in 2004, calling the false reports the most terrible mistake in our history. And if you just remind you, this is the Sun we're talking about, so the competition is fierce, I think.
It was all on the telly. That's the bizarre thing. The Sun ran this story, which was lies fed to them indirectly from South Yorkshire Police, and saying that people had urinated on the police and stolen from dead bodies, and yet the whole thing was on telly, you know, which would be like after the Olympics, somebody saying Al-Qaeda were in the crowd and Claire Balding's head was cut off and put on a stick, and the Sun puts that on the front page as being true, and no one questions it for 23 years.
An independent report into the Hillsborough disaster has confirmed that South Yorkshire Police tried to cover up their own failings by altering statements to shift the blame onto Liverpool fans. The Hillsborough independent panel have proved what most people knew all along. The police were corrupt, the fans weren't to blame, and when the Sun claims to be printing the truth, it's probably not. One of the sources of the Sun story was revealed to be the then MP for Sheffield, Sir Irvin Patnick. Unless you're listening to the repeat of the show when it's just plain Irvin Patnick. In his career as an MP, Irvin Patnick opposed sanctions on apartheid South Africa, supported Section 28, and voted to reintroduce the death penalty. He left politics in 1997 to spend more time with his conscience. 2 points to Jeremy. Susan, listen to this. ABC. Susan, who doesn't think Wales should make the grade?
Yes, this is Michael Gove. This is in relation to the English and the Welsh examination system, which, just for the purposes of clarity, Scotland has a different exam system. We compete for sporrans in Highland Games. I myself got 2 tossing the cabers in maths. And the GCSEs, what happened was that in January some people sat it and passed it, and then they changed the grading system so that when people sat it in just before the summer, a lot of people were getting worse marks. So in between times, you were a success, then you were a failure. Much like Britain's performance in the Eurovision Song Contest in the 60s and in the 90s. And Michael Gove has said he doesn't believe there should be any political interference. Mm. And he also said he's not taking any responsibility for the furore because it was the previous government that did it. At what point are they going to stop saying, but it was them, not me? You're the education minister. Perhaps you should sort it out, mate.
So did Labour briefly come back into power between the January exams and June?
Help me out here, because I'm not really familiar with the whole GCSE thing, and I'm a bit confused by...
It's a bit like the Welsh.
New Zealand's kind of like the Wales of Australia, I think, okay. So maybe I'm in good company. But Ofqual, that to me sounds like something you'd give to a child with a fever. But it's some kind of examining board, and then you've got all the other examining boards, so you've got EdXL, AQA, OCR, OCD, ACDC, and YMCA. How it works is the schools can choose whichever exams they want from whichever examining bodies, so they can just sort of do maths from EdXL, we'll do AQA English, and we'll do What's Hot, What's Not from More Magazine.
That's pretty much how it works.
And then if you understand the grading system, you've passed.
But the bit you have to add on to that, it's harder to get an A grade in Wales because they do all the oral exams in close part harmony. So it's...
Gove is clearly interfering because he's clearly wanting people to get marked down because he thinks too many people are doing well in education. And because rather than think it's about trying to get everybody up to a certain standard, if somebody passing is to have any validity in his mind, somebody has to fail, which is not the way we look at everything. I mean, if we reach the dream scenario where we have 100% adult literacy in this country, in Gove's mind, that would mean that standards of literacy had actually slipped. So people would have to take their reading test again. They'd have to read Ulysses from start to finish in the dark.
But Gove, I think Gove and Ofqual, they say that it's not so much that the summer grades were too low, it's just that the ones in January were too high.
Oh.
Which I think may be true, because actually my youngest son took his English GCSE in January and he got a B, which is astounding, because the only sentence he's capable of writing in exams is totes, amazeballs, lol. I think that's all he did, he got a B for it.
When I went to school, when I was a lad, we sat exams from the age of five. And the way that they awarded the marks...
Five.
I was sitting
your
exams
fuzzy
from the age of
third, no.
And they used to give you your marks by announcing you up to the front of the class in order of your stupidity, essentially. And so from the age of five, you used to troop up and they would go, Susan, you don't know what type of mushroom this is. For some reason, I always remember the Nature's exam where I didn't know what type of mushroom it is, rectified that. But... French I passed because I could sing a French song, and that's the only thing. I went to Paris recently and all I could do was Ali à la banque, frappe à la porte, est-ce que c'est ouvert, tout fermé, ou fermé, that's it. That's
wow.
That's all I have.
It's like Carla Bruni's in the room.
They should just have an amnesty, because it's just a bit of paper, like in The Wizard of Oz, isn't it? It's just a bit of paper, but there's so many things, like if you haven't got your maths, there's countries you can't go to and things like that. They should have an amnesty where we all just get degrees. For example, you can get given an honorary degree, can't you?
I've got
on
loads
the basis of
those.
Nothing. Exactly. It just means
those.
Nothing. So why
what
not?
What do you mean?
Well, you're probably a rector of somewhere. You don't know what a rector is, do you? Just say, who's a bit famous off the telly who's bored enough to be a rector of our university? Sandy Toksvig, let's get her. And you go, I'm the rector. What are my special powers? Do I get to carry a firearm? No, I'm sorry. It's purely nominal. And but you know.
I'll have you know I'm the Chancellor of Portsmouth University.
Chancellor means you run it in German.
I do.
What does that mean?
Yeah, I get people to call me Angela. It's my first rule.
Angular is not a word I would use to describe myself. No disrespect, but I think we're looking at rhomboid, I think.
I'm also...
She's the Chancellor. She can have me killed.
I am the Chancellor of this university. Your powers mean nothing to me. You poor fool, you are powerless faced with the Chancellor.
Sorry, I'm just going to regrade the schools. Education Secretary Michael Gove has attacked his Welsh counterpart for ordering disputed GCSEs to be regraded. Gove told MPs that raising Welsh pupils' grades would undermine future employers' confidence in the value of their qualifications. I love this. How naive. Thinking that there'll be employers in the future. 2 points to Susan. Cal, whose early draft has begotten a row? I'm going to say that so it makes sense. Whose early... Cal...
I've got that bit.
Whose early draft has bigotten a row? I'm trying to get the word bigot and begotten. Talk to me about bigots, Cal.
This would be referring to Nick Clegg. So please forgive me if I'm not completely up to speed with the news, because I do live in Australia. So
no, listen, Nick Clegg's not completely up to speed. I wouldn't worry.
We're just up to the part where Charles has married Camilla.
That's right.
And I'm really excited to be here just in time for the Olympics. So this is about Nick Clegg,
yes.
Who I don't know whether I'm allowed to do this, but I feel a bit sorry for him.
Aww.
Because people don't seem to like him. And every time I hear his name, I think of that Rolf Harris song, you know, that goes, I'm Jake the Pig, dee lee lee lee, with my extra Clegg, dee lee lee. So he His office had put out a speech this week. They put out a draft copy, and it was for Nick Clegg to speak at a marriage equality reception, and it used the term bigot to refer to people who opposed gay marriage. Caused a little bit of a fuss. So Nick Clegg's office came out and said, no, we didn't mean bigot, we meant some people. So they replaced it with some people. Clegg said it wasn't even the sort of word that he'd use. He said maybe he would have used it before he was Deputy Prime Minister, but now he doesn't really say anything at all. Religious people got offended by the use of the word bigot, so he wrote to the Archbishops of Canterbury and Westminster and assured them that the speech didn't reflect his views on them. He went, no, I didn't mean you guys, I meant those other bigots. And he said it didn't reflect his views, it wasn't written by him, his office had come up with it. But if it didn't reflect his views, he didn't think that. Is his office just randomly taking speeches off the internet?
Are you saying that Nick Clegg doesn't write his own speeches? This is shocking. This is like finding out that Milli Vanilli wasn't really singing.
Well, he clearly didn't write it because one of his advisors said to the papers that it was a back office bungle.
Oh.
Quite painful.
Yes. Wasn't he on Rainbow, back office
late-night version.
But why doesn't Clegg just say what he thinks? Because that was a great thing about Liberals. They never really thought they would get anywhere, so they used to say what they believed, some of which was perfectly endearing, sensible stuff. And then they get power and they get all nervous and start saying, oh, no, we didn't mean any of that. And now he's finished. Why doesn't he just come out and say, yeah, you are bigots. You're just bigots. Get used to read my lips. Bigots. Bigots. That's what you are. Because how else can you describe it? Mm. A person suffering from tolerance deficit disorder. Bigots always say, well, if men and men and women and women are allowed to get married, what next? Will people be able to marry animals? And you think, well, you never draw the parallel between humans and animals in any other circumstance. You say, well, I'm going out for a drink with Brian. So oh, well, if you're going out for a drink with Brian, why don't you go out for a drink with a rhinoceros then?
My favourite ever Norman Tebbit remark, when civil partnerships came in, he said, I can't be the only person who has noticed that since the introduction of civil partnerships, there's been a tremendous rise in violent crime. It's all those gay people saying, I'm not having floral curtains, I'm not.
Now, Susan, you are married, and let's be honest, your husband is not a man, is she? The country, Susan got hitched this summer. The country didn't. I know the economy has not revived. That can be put at Susan's door.
What's the rule in Australia? Oh,
it's worse than here. You can't have a civil partnership.
At all?
No, and if you get married in another country as a gay couple, Australia won't even recognise it. So basically, if you come to Australia, Australia goes, la, 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 can't hear you. Can't hear you. You're just friends.
Or sisters, which is always my favourite. Yeah.
Walking companions. B&B and you arrive in your sensible shoes and they say, going walking? No, not really. We just like Rohan trousers. It's just, it's part of what you have to wear as part of the uniform.
Nick Clegg has become embroiled in a row over gay marriage after advisers had to remove comments in the draft version of a speech calling opponents bigots. Nick Clegg wrote to religious leaders to apologise, but by mistake addressed one of the letters to the Archbigot of Canterbury. At the end of round one, the scores are Francis and Susan have got 4 points, but so too have Cal and Jeremy. We start round two with a sign spotted on the door of the upper toilet facilities at the Glenmore campsite.
Facilities closed for cleaning between 1:45 p.m. and 4 p.m. Please use bottom block.
Our thanks to Chris Whitby for sending us that. Francis, which line is virgin on nationalisation?
Is it the West Coast Main Line?
Yes, indeed, yeah.
It's that, pardon me, boys. Richard Branson's lost his choo-choo. It is extraordinary, though, because Beardy Branson seems to think we've all forgotten that for the 15 years he was running this line, Virgin Trains became a byword for ludicrously overpriced tickets and endless taxpayer bailouts. And he's now presenting himself as this philanthropic chap who only ever wanted to run it for charitable purposes certainly wasn't in it to make money. I mean, he's a businessman. They wouldn't do anything as vulgar as that. And he feels a bit hurt that after all his good works over the last 15 years, they've taken away his franchise and given it to First something or other, isn't it?
It's the English National
First
Opera,
group.
I think.
First Group. Worst group, as its passengers call it, which is no doubt just as bad as Virgin, if not worse. But Branson is now going to challenge it in the courts. So that will drag on for years. And then eventually when he loses, he'll have to get asylum in the Ecuadorian embassy, I suppose, as everyone else does. And in the meantime, they've got to keep the trains running. So the new Transport Secretary, in fact, this man, Patrick McLaughlin, David Cameron's pet coal miner, has said that to keep the trains running while this lawsuit's going on, he's going to nationalise it.
He said that he was determined that the trains will not stop running, which, given his job, is quite an underwhelming thing to say.
We had that in East Anglia, where I live. Our trains got nationalised about 3 years ago because National Express ran them into the ground and eventually had them taken away. And so I travel on nationalised trains, and they seem to work perfectly well, and 30 years' time, they'll all be nationalised. We'll have nationalised railway, nationalised banks, all these things that, when Tony Benn suggested them in the 1970s, were proof of insanity, are now being introduced by that nice David Cameron.
To be fair, though, Francis, passenger numbers on the West Coast doubled under Virgin. Although I think it's mainly because the East Coast was so bad, people were happy to go the long way round. I think it was.
It's absolutely crucial, this, though, to me. Because I spend at least 10 hours a week on Virgin trains. If the trains stop, there is only one other option, and that is the bus. Now, I don't know if anyone here has been on the bus from London to Glasgow. It's like Deliverance, but not quite as nice. But I do like the trains, because they're always empty, because it's so expensive. And you can have such fun. The other day, I was genuinely on a Virgin train. There was nobody in the carriage apart from me, and the people serving had just gone for a chat, and that was fine. And I decided to go to... I tried to go to the toilet in different ways, just to cheer up.
So you must tell us.
I tried to walk to the toilet in different ways, just to cheer myself up. So I decided to walk to the toilet like Adamant and the Prince Charming. So I was walking to the toilet doing the movement with my hands and singing. And it turned out there was quite a lot of other people in the carriage who were just very quiet. And I walked past them singing, Prince Charming! Morning.
I was once on a train with the wonderful Australian writer Clive James. And it was just the two of us in the carriage, and a man got on in a full camouflage outfit. And Clive looked at him and went, I hope you're not going to be weird on my train. The government will take over the West Coast Main Line if Virgin's legal challenge against the decision to award the franchise to First Group is not settled by December the 9th. The new franchise has been delayed by court procedure and a points failure outside crew. 2 points to Francis. Susan, who has slammed his critics and finally served up a British success?
Andy Murray.
Was one.
Andy Murray won the New York tennis open thing. And as usual, people talk about Andy Murray not being the explosive ball of charisma. But I like that. He just plays tennis, quite frankly. I don't think I want to see a chuckle brother against Roger Federer. I don't understand a British obsession for everyone being entertaining. He's a tennis player. Let him play tennis. That's the problem with politicians. We've all got round to this kind of grand way of choosing politicians. Oh, he's got a nice smile, hasn't he? He's got a hanky. It's like... I don't understand what the problem is. Scottish people generally don't get overexcited about things because we're always expecting the worst. So he won New York and he's probably thinking, oh, I'll probably lose my luggage on the way home. That's what... We're natural pessimists and that's
why... You're naturally glass half-empty people, aren't you? Especially if it's a glass of Buckfast Abbey tonic. Yeah.
Do you think his mum will calm down a bit now?
Judy.
I don't want to accuse her of vicariously wallowing in her son's achievements... But I am accusing her of that. She's a bit too frantic. I mean, I would love it if he turned around and said, right, Mum, I've won that, and now I want to pursue my real dream, which is contemporary dance.
Get out of here and play tennis! That's why I gave birth to you, you wee bastard! For 1 second,
you have the mental picture of her giving birth to him like one of those automatic tennis ball launches?
Catch this, midwife!
The good thing was that Andy gave himself a talking to just before the fifth set. So he was two sets up, and he lost two sets, and he went for a bathroom break. He said he gave himself a good talking to in the toilet. Now, I've done that. I've done it when I've had too much to drink. You go in and you kind of go, "Oh, Susan, I think you're drunk. What are you going to do about it?" And you go, "I'll just go out really casual. And I won't have any more to drink, apart from this vodka I've got in the cubicle." So I like to think I'm very like Andy Murray in that way. We both use positive mental attitude in our everyday life.
Sean Connery was there. He called the result a victory for his country. I had no idea Andy Murray was so well supported in the Bahamas, so that was good.
Did you see him go into meltdown about his watch, though? He forgot to wear the watch that he is paid to watch by the people that make the watch. You know, like all athletes have to be sponsored now. And he didn't have it on, and the pictures were about to be taken, and he was in a meltdown because his sponsorship deal would be cancelled because it would be revealed that he only wears it for cynical financial reasons. Oh. He knows damn well what the time is.
I don't see the problem myself with that kind of sponsorship. As I said, from the comfort of my Mothercare booster seat. Andy Murray has become the first British male to win a tennis Grand Slam in 76 years after defeating Novak Djokovic at the US Open. Murray had been British number one for a long time now. It's not exactly difficult, is it? It's like being tallest news quiz panellist.
Can you get cream for Djokovic? You can.
It's right next to the bottom block, I think.
This is the first Grand Slam victory for a British male since 1936, after which point all tennis players were melted down to make tanks for World War II. The Daily Mail described Andy's long-term girlfriend, Kim, as having an uncomplaining nature, making her the perfect tennis wife. Suddenly, 1936 doesn't seem so long ago. 2 points to Susan. Cal, listen to this. Privacy has gone down the pan.
Oh, this would be about the CCTV announcement that's been made. There's been a report that's come out that says that in schools around the country there's 100,000 cameras.
I know.
In schools. They're not just outside in the playground, they're in the classrooms and they're in the locker rooms and also in toilets. And according to the figures, average schools have 38 pupils per camera. So
really?
There's one camera every 38 pupils, which to me, I think that's just a class photo.
Yeah.
And supposedly it's to stop behaviour like smoking in the toilets, but if you're going to stop things like that, why not just install a sniffer dog in every cubicle? Or you could go as far as having breathalysers, or just actually just hold school classes in a police station.
Do you think it's a money-making thing? Do you think at the end of the year the school releases a box set?
It's the war on terror, because without that level of vigilance which you mock, who knows when a primary school child isn't going to hijack a lavatory and fly it into a tall building. That hasn't happened is proof that it works.
Is though that anything that you see on CCTV can be easily misinterpreted. I think we all know that. I learned a lesson. I was accused of trying to steal a life-size cardboard cutout of Twiggy from Marks and Spencer's when it was clearly Mylene Klass that I was trying to steal.
But I don't know why we need CCTV, because whenever they show footage on television, it's always those people with blurred out faces who commit the crimes. And
maybe it's to stop people cheating in exams, because the whole point about revision is people say, oh, you must have all revisioned 5 years before. Rubbish. The only way you pass an exam is what you read in the toilet before and in the middle of an exam. Presumably, that's why Andy, what's-his-face, went off to have a wee. He was revising. The important things that he couldn't remember, like hit the ball...
I find it quite traumatic, the idea of having cameras in changing rooms, because I was quite a late developer at school and I found it traumatic enough getting changed in front of other girls for gym as it was. And one particular afternoon we were getting changed and I was trying to shield my little underdeveloped concave body, and I bit the hem of my T-shirt to get my arms into it and it got stuck in my braces. And so I spent the next 20 minutes topless trying to remove my T-shirt from my braces, and that was traumatic enough without having to worry.
Now, I've seen it on YouTube, actually.
It's a terrible thing.
I think fundamentally, if someone is going to film me taking my clothes off, I want money for it. And I think that's the rule people, especially girls, should learn. If someone is going to film you with your kit off, get the cash up front. That's the way I live my life. And that's why I can afford to travel on Virgin Trains.
More than 200 schools have fitted CCTV in bathrooms and changing rooms, according to a survey into the scale of surveillance of pupils. The cameras were set up to prevent bad behaviour, such as graffiti or bullying in toilets, but unfortunately school authorities couldn't see much through the smoke. This is an outrage. They don't have the right to constantly survey us like this, said student Scott Marshall in the toilets at Braintree Grammar at 1534 Tuesday, the 12th of September. 2 points to Cal. Jeremy, who's saying au revoir to tax and bonjour to Brussels?
France's richest man, Bernard Arnault. He's going to live in Belgium. Now, there was a headline in Libération, which is French for liberation, and they said, casse-toi something con.
Riche con.
Which, now you see, well, con doesn't, its literal translation is lady's front bottom, but French people don't really use it in that way. It's a playful, amiable thing, which I suppose is appropriate for what is an amiable thing. And, the point was, they were accusing him of being tax-dodging scum like Boots or Vodafone or Sir Philip Green, but actually, he says it's not. He will continue to pay the French rate of tax, but he says, I'm going to live in Belgium for personal reasons. Raison personnelle, which he hasn't specified, which suggests it's something embarrassing, like going to live in Belgium, for example.
He's worth €41 billion.
But he runs this Louis Vuitton Hennessy luxury goods firm.
Yeah, he's the leader.
How do you get that rich from selling suitcases and bottles of brandy?
Oh, darling, you haven't seen the. I mean, he's worth £32 billion. Honestly, that is three Louis Vuitton handbags.
But also, for a man who runs this luxury goods firm, he is suing Libération for their headline because he said it was vulgar, and he's suing them for vulgarity. This is from the man who sells Louis Vuitton luggage to idiot celebrities.
He's been accused of being unpatriotic, but he's not being unpatriotic. He's being very patriotic, just to Belgium.
Yes, that's true. According to European law, to become Belgian, you either have to have Belgian family, a residence in Belgium for over 5 years, or a small white dog who can solve crimes.
When I was at university and I had no money, I used to eat oven chips with cream poured over the top and pretend I was Belgian to cheer myself up.
Too much.
I'm sort of disappointed. Disappointed in the headlines, because go away, you rich front bottom. It's not a great headline. Because English tabloids are much better at great headlines. Like, so maybe it would have been something like, you know, frog legs it. Or don't slam the Dior on your way out.
In a blow to French President François Hollande's taxation plans, Bernard Arnault, France's richest man, has applied for Belgian citizenship. Arnault is leader of the Louis Vuitton Moët Hennessy Group, formerly Crosby, Stills and Nash. In response, President Hollande said two can play at that game and changed his name to Luxembourg. Arnault will become Belgian at a special ceremony where he will have his sense of taste and smell removed.
Is Luxembourg really there?
What do you mean, is it really?
Well,
there?
I've never seen it.
At the end of round two, the scores are Francis and Susan have got 8 points, but so too have Cal and Jeremy. Before we start round three, here's a headline from the Harrogate News website.
Police seek new leads in search for stolen dogs.
To Chris Porter for sending us that. Francis, who followed a hunch and found a king-sized discovery?
Oh, this is King Richard III. Yes. They think they've found him in a car park in Leicester. Or his skeleton. They may have got it wrong. I mean, I think it's more likely to be someone who went back, couldn't find where he parked his car, and after about 2 hours, just lost the will to live and lay down and died, which we've all been through. But they think it's him because the skeleton has got a crooked back. And the one thing everyone knows about Richard III is that he was a hunchback with a withered arm, except it's not true. There's no contemporary evidence whatsoever that he was like that, nor that he killed the princess in the tower, nor that he murdered his wife. It's all made up by Shakespeare. Because Shakespeare made him out to be this kind of Plantagenet Phil Mitchell character, this really evil thug. Well, he wasn't. In fact, when he died, if only Tony Blair had been around, he could have said, truly, he was the people's Plantagenet.
Shakespeare always makes me feel bad, though, because I always feel like an underachiever. Do you know what I realised the other day? That when Shakespeare was my age, he'd been dead for 2 years.
I think you shouldn't discount Shakespeare's contribution because he was found in a car park, right? And in the first quarto of Richard III, it actually reads, a Volkswagen Passat, my kingdom for a Volkswagen Passat.
The Telegraph had just the best coverage. According to the Telegraph, the skeleton had near-death trauma. Doesn't that make it sound like he nearly died and then pulled through at the last minute?
I like the Times headline. When I read it this morning, it just had the king in the car park. And I was like, oh, no, what's Harry done now?
They're testing a gentleman called Ibsen or something like that, aren't they?
He's a direct descendant
of Richard III. And I quite like that idea that we could all get DNA tested to see whether or not we're related to the royal family, a royal family, whichever one. I don't care which one takes me. I don't really mind.
Presumably, if it's found that he is related to Richard III, he'll be liable for, I would have thought, about 500 years of pay and display parking fines.
I can do the thing.
What's that?
Now is the winter of our discontent, made glorious summer by this sun of York, and all the clouds that lower upon our house in the deep bosom of the ocean buried. Now are our brows bound with victorious wreaths, our bruised arms hung up for monuments, our stern alarms changed to many meetings, our dreadful marches to delightful measures. Grim-visaged war hath smoothed his wrinkled front, and now instead of mounting barbed steeds to fright the souls of fearful adversaries, he capers nimbly in a lady's chamber to this livious pleasing of a lute. Exterminate, exterminate.
More than 500 years since he was killed in battle, archaeologists believe they have found the skeleton of King Richard III underneath a council car park in Leicester. Richard's death concluded the Wars of the Roses, which was the bloodiest internal conflict since the Battle of Quality Street and the Milk Tray Massacre. The skeleton displays trauma to the skull and has severe spinal curvature. Athos have judged him fit for work and his benefits have been stopped. 2 points to Francis. Cal, who's eyeing up your house just for a nose?
Well, apparently 1 in 5 people admit to going and looking at houses for sale without any intention of buying them. Most of those people are actually burglars. And the other percentage of people that go without intention to buy is just Kirsty Allsop.
That's fair enough, isn't it? I mean, it's just browsing, isn't it? You should be able to ring on someone's doorbell and they open the door and they say, can I help you? You say, no, just looking, thank you. People go to funerals, don't they?
Anyone
yeah,
really?
Go to, yeah, older people, because they want to check it out, because, you know, they're thinking of dying as well. You can go to court cases, can't you? You can sit in the public gallery. So you should really be able to go and look. If someone's put their house on the market, then they're asking for it, I say.
But it's a natural curiosity, because people can pretend to be entirely different. So, you know, I've got an image of all of you because I've met you, but your house is what reveals what you're truly like. And, I mean, I think it's fascinating. I love walking down the street and if people don't close their curtains, especially, you know, they put on the lights, and you can just wander around looking in people's houses. But everyone else does that. I am not the only person.
Sometimes you have to look after a neighbour's cat, don't you? You've got keys and you go into their house and they're not there. And you think, well, I fed the cat. Got time on my hands. Would it be so wrong? Would it be so wrong to walk around in my neighbour's underwear for an hour?
A poll has found that 1 in 5 Britons arranges viewings of houses they don't intend buying just so they can have a look around. The poll of 2,000 people was taken on behalf of the television channel Home. Wow. They found 2,000 people who've heard of the television channel. I once went round somebody's house and absolutely every single bit of furniture had a picture of the Queen on it. Unbelievably creepy, but Susan, thanks for the coffee. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings. The teams have brought along Mr. Ween.
This is from Michael Bernard. It's from Daunce's School, a letter sent out to parents, saying, "Dear parent, you are cordially invited to the Daunce's Rifle Club Parents' Evening next Tuesday. The evening will consist of an opportunity to see your child participating in a friendly competition, to meet our coach, Sandra Bull, and to have a go at shooting yourself."
Ms. Kelman.
This is from Perry Wheeler, and it's a South Australian police press release. It says, "Police are puzzled as to the reason behind the theft of 42 kilograms of mayonnaise from a business premises. Police are asking anyone with information on the theft or hearing of people making large quantities of coleslaw or potato salad to please contact the police."
Wilson.
I actually keep these in my wallet. I've had these in my wallet for a while. They're from a Tasmanian newspaper. There's two of them. 2 days in a row, they had an article entitled "Oven Fire." And the first one is, "Fire crews were called to a home in View Road yesterday after a dirty oven caught fire momentarily. The fire was out quickly with little damage." "The next day, oven fire. Fire crews attended an oven fire at Saundridge Road. The fire was out on arrival."
Mr. Hardy.
This, it was sent in by someone called Jackie. It says, "I read in a sign in a Gloucestershire hospital waiting room this morning dealing with various issues of life with a plaster cast. Under the section about going to the loo, it stated, 'If you find sitting on the toilet uncomfortable, you may find it easier to rest your leg cast on a stool.'"
Let's take a look at the final score. Francis and Susan have got 12 points, but in a regrading done by the Welsh Examining Board, Cal and Jeremy are this week's winners with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the I newspaper sent in by Andrew Jefford.
"Senior Taliban commanders have reacted with glee at having the opportunity to target Prince Harry when he is deployed in Afghanistan. Mullah Burjan said he will aim to shoot down Apache gunships and would love to hit his chopper."
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the News Quiz Extra were Francis Ween, Susan Kalman, Cal Wilson and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toxpig, and the news was read by me, Vaughan Savage. The chair's script was written by Rodri Crooks, John Hunter and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Matthew Oakley and Jack Bernard. The producer was Ben Walker.